Without further ado, hi, I'm Cronus, and this is episode 2 of the Musician's Insider. And today we're talking with Moses Avalon, who's been a pretty good friend of mine for more than a decade now. And I think we first met when I was following your mailing list back before I left Ottawa to hit the States. So that was in like 2002 or 3. So it's been a long time. I guess the first time we met was when I came to your place to discuss all things internet and music. So I think maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself and what you've been doing over the past 20 years and how you've been a music industry advocate and some of the books you've written. And just tell us a little bit about yourself, please, Moses.
Hey, Aaron. Well, I started off in the music business as a producer engineer. I play a few instruments, and I quickly realized, no, I wasn't good enough to make a living as a musician, but I was probably good enough to record them. And so I started a small recording studio, which I ran out of my bedroom, and produced a lot of acts for, $25 an hour. And eventually one thing led to another. I ended up with a studio gig. Then eventually I got my break working on a couple of big acts. One of them won a Grammy, and then that led to a whole bunch of other things. And at some point in the late 1990s, I got kind of tired with the producing component because I saw what was happening in the industry and saw what I was going to do to have to compete, and decided to get out of the music industry by writing a book called Confessions of a Record Producer. And I wanted to pursue writing as a career. And I thought the book would get me out of the music industry. And it did the polar exact opposite on steroids, because the book became a hit. And then there were two others that followed it. And I started getting a lot of phone calls as a kind of a go-to, consultant, guru, whatever. And then attorneys started calling me to do what's called expert witness testimony. That's when you testify in a court about the standards and practices of a particular area of expertise, in this case, the music business. And I testified a number of landmark cases. And so that, while trying to get out of the music industry, it just like Al Pacino in Godfather, just pulled me back in.
Are there any cases we can talk about or that you can mention, any big ones?
It would take too long. If you go to my website, you can see a number of the cases that I'm allowed to talk about are listed under my client list. But it's MosesAvalon.com. And let me see, doing various areas of consulting, and did that for like 15 years, maybe more. And then I decided, it's time to kind of maybe even retire from that. And so I said, what do I want to do? I like smoking cigars. I like hanging out with my friends. So I opened a cigar lounge called Ash, which is where we are coming to you live from right now. I'm standing in front of a bay of member lockers. These are all lockers that belong to the members of our lounge.
It looks like a library cabinet.
It actually comes from a hardware store in Portland, Oregon. This is about 100 years old. And we retrofitted it to be lockers for cigars to keep them humid, and this is where our members keep all their stuff. And they come here and they smoke their cigars. We just hang out and talk about anything.
It's a cigar. It's like a cigar spa.
Yes, that's a great name for it. Cigar spa. I don't know if Zoom will let me flip the camera. Let me see if it'll let me do that.
I hope so.
I don't think it lets me. Oh yeah, here we go. So we can flip the camera here.
All right, so and just move it slow. Move it slow. Keep it steady.
Okay, do a walkthrough. This is retail center. This is where you come in and you buy a cigar, or two, or 10. And this is a hermetically sealed closet for your coat and your bag. Through here is a special lounge we call the Illuminati Lounge. This is where for our members who need a little bit more privacy. We watch movies in here on the weekends. And then our big lounge is over 2,000 square feet. It's the largest cigar lounge in Los Angeles. And this is, we call this the Commons. There's my dog having a nap over there. This is one of our members who's in here almost every day. How are you doing? And it's where people just hang out, smoke their cigars, play chess, watch the news, watch people walk by on Hollywood Boulevard.
Where are you located?
Hollywood and Western.
Oh, beautiful. I used to live near there. That was the freeway exit I used to take.
You can go to ashloungela.com and read all about us. Or you can follow us on Instagram at ash_lounge.
I'll put it up. Now, I'm curious to know Sorry, go ahead.
I said I'm here most of the time, and like, for example, I'm still connected to a lot of music people, as you know. And about 2 weeks ago, a couple Fridays ago, just a whole bunch of them showed up here impromptu and did this jam session. These are all these, you know, great 80s studio session singers and musicians. They just showed up here and jammed out to about 1 a.m, singing all these like classic, you know, singing Whitesnake songs and things like that, and Foreigner and like all the great hits from the 80s. And they loved it so much, they plan to come back and make a habit out of it. So if you come and hang out here, that's the kind of thing you might see.
I love it. I think that's really, it reminds me of kind of what you were doing in your own backyard for a while, and now you've taken it to the passion, to the next level.
I just basically took my lifestyle and duplicated it in a commercial environment, in a retail environment.
Well, that's really neat. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about back before, like, in more chronologically here, like, what got you involved in NAMM, the NAMM show? Because that's where we kind of started doing important stuff together the first time anything was really, you know, coming together when I first moved to Los Angeles. And I was just curious how you got into that world. I guess it's just that where you have to be, but how did that start? Because you really introduced me to a lot of people.
Well, NAMM is the largest music conference in the world. I believe it's over 60,000 people, something like that, over 4 days. It basically takes over all of Anaheim, California. And I can't remember what my initial introduction was, probably through Hal Leonard Books, because Hal Leonard Books has an enormous booth there, and my books are all published on Hal Leonard. And I probably said, I'm going to be at NAMM, you should come to NAMM. And it's an opportunity for me to sit down with my publisher, because they're usually there in Milwaukee and I don't get to see them. I just talk to them on the phone. So I got to meet the sales reps, and I started going to NAMM, and then eventually NAMM asked me to be a keynote speaker. And then they asked me the next year and the next year and the next year. And, you know, because of that, I'm able to get, if you're on my mailing list, which is free, you could get a pass to go to NAMM for $25. And I've gotten, I don't know, probably several thousand people passes by this point.
Right.
To go to NAMM on various years. And that's how I got involved with it. And they keep asking me to speak. And as long as they keep asking me to speak, I'll keep doing it.
And as you know, this is the Musicians Insider podcast. So a lot of musicians are trying to figure out, how can I get to NAMM? So if you don't know how to get to NAMM, I'll put a link up to Moses's site and information on how you can get a pass for $25 if you want to go next year.
Just sign on my mailing list, and I send out a notice usually around September, announcing what the specifications are to get a $25 pass, and just go to the link and fill out the form and you're in.
The biggest problem most musicians have with the NAMM is the registration is they do it too late and they miss it for the year. So just know that you need to do it like September for the show. That's cool. Appreciate that. And also, thankfully, because I'm in the SEO field, obviously I was able to get on a few panels thanks to you. I appreciate that. The Hot Zone panels, we did some SEO things. I remember I was filming some stuff for you, and it was interesting to just be in that sort of similar to like the SEO world I've been in from my day job sort of thing, but with a music connection to it. So it was really cool to go to that. Let's see here. Any thoughts on the future of music, or what advice might you have for new musicians who have a CD but don't know what to do next aside from trying to perform?
A CD? My advice would be to, you know,
I mean an
get
album.
On streaming.
When I say CD, I mean a finished product that's got, you know, 10 or 12 songs on it, and then wherever that can be. But what would you recommend for someone in that situation?
I mean, the first thing, I wouldn't recommend anybody record. Well, you can record 10 or 12 songs at a time. I understand that the economics make sense to do that. But I don't know if I would release 12 songs at a time on an album. And I've been saying this for years before it became standard practice at labels. You know, you want to release like 3 or 4 songs at once and do it in buckets of 3 or 4 songs every 4 or 5 months. That way you keep your listeners, your fans engaged. I would say, you know, you need to be fluent in social media. If you're not, you have to hire someone who is. It's absolutely essential. TikTok is essential. YouTube, I would say, you know, was essential, maybe still is essential, but there are alternatives now to YouTube, thankfully. Instagram is essential. My fans, I think, is a great place for an independent band to start building a following. They'll actually pay you if you can bring people in. And I don't know, even clubs won't pay you to bring fans in. You still have to pay a club. So here's a website that actually pays you to bring fans in. I think it's all about social media and all about just getting your music out there through the various platforms, all of them. I'm not going to say one's better than the other. I think they all have their use, even Facebook, which is mostly for, you know, people my age, but people my age still buy records, and they still buy records by young bands as well. So they're all, these are essential. You need someone on your team who's fluent in social media. And that would be my recommendation. And of course, getting on streaming services, getting on Spotify, getting on Apple Music. None of these things are hard to do anymore. There used to be huge gatekeepers to get to these places. Now you can do it, you know, through any one of a number of reasonably priced aggregators. So that would be my recommendation.
Now, the problem is, if everyone has a band that's on Spotify, how do you get heard and how do you get the gigs? Like, what is the way to take it to the next level? Because there's so many companies out there that offer streaming services to promote your music, but in reality, it's not helping the artist at all. It's just inflating numbers with perhaps fake playlists or scams and just a lot of selling the dream going on. So I'm trying to help people figure out how to get through that.
Selling the dream is always going to be a viable business as long as you have any business where the supply of content outweighs the demand of content, and where people are, you know, very desperate to get heard and get noticed. I don't have a soundbite piece of advice to avoid any of these scams. It's a very complex subject. I recommend you read, you know, I've written 4 books on the subject. I recommend, you know, you pick up one of them. I know that sounds self-serving, but
your advice has been very helpful in the past, and you understand how to research, like when the market isn't working, you switch your gears onto something else. Now, I've seen you do that. That's why I'm thinking, I know you think that why would you ever want to be an artist? Well, the answer is it's going to happen. People want to be artists. So how do they break through the mold? And I know there's a lot of new music technology coming. Like we were talking about this on the last podcast, the spatial audio is coming. And there's like, so you can still be $1 million production because you can have cameras all over the stage now. But what do people do to prepare for that? One of the things is to make sure you have all your masters split apart so you can do more of the techie things happening, have your stems available and access to that.
I look at a company called Stemify. Stemify is the only company I'm aware of that's actually invested in stems as a viable product. So now all of your individual tracks could be thought of as individual pieces of content, and they're still a new company. I know the CEO, and you know, he's very passionate about music and always has been. He actually envisioned the first digital record company before Amazon even started selling CDs. That was back in like 1996, I believe, is when I first met him. And we've been friends, you know, since then. And you know, he's not so big that an independent artist can't make a deal directly with him yet.
I'd love to talk
to him. He's making deals. Yeah, I'll put you in touch with him. His name is Josh Kaplan. So yeah, I know he's making deals with major labels. He may already have a few in place. And then there will be that point where he will be too big. So right now, he's still new. You can still get in there. And your individual tracks, your bass lines, your drum loops, your guitar licks, these are all pieces of your music that can be commoditized and monetized. And you should do that.
Like just the solo from one song might be perfect for... In The Simpsons, when Otto's driving and he's playing the solo to Metallica's One for a second, that sample was a perfect use case.
That's right.
I'm just looking at my Metallica pick. I always have a reference to some sort of pick. any artists that you're noticing lately that have caught your eye or attention?
And I wish I had a good answer for that. I'm ashamed of myself. I've been so absorbed in the creation of Ash. And as you know, I have a new book coming out in September under my non-Moses name, which is the biggest book I've ever written. And so I've been absorbed in the pre-promotion for that. I just wanted to apologize to the entire independent music community and say I have not kept up. I have not, you know, listened to any new stuff. And that's a shunna on me. It's a shame on me that I haven't done that. So I don't have a great answer for you, and I wish I did.
Well, okay, so to make sure that your apology does get to your audience, I ask that you please retweet this podcast when it goes live so that they can actually see it, because they're not going to know about this unless you send it to them. I'm excited. I got some cool guests. I got Steve Thompson coming on this week. He's a producer that has done a lot of really cool things, and we've worked together and hung out a lot, and I can't wait to talk about that. What else do we want to talk about? Is there anything that you'd like to talk about? Anything you want to ask me? anything on your mind or anything you want to promote? You can tell me more about your cigar lounge or anything else, but I think we got most of that.
Well, this is a very music-friendly place. You want to come here and bring your instrument, a couple of friends, hang out for a little bit, jam, have a cigar while you're doing it. You don't have to be a cigar smoker. We have the most advanced and cleanest air system in all of California. We clean air 12 times an hour through these very advanced, let me see if I can flip the camera around and show it to you. We have these very special fans. I don't know, is that a good shot there? Can you see that spinning?
That's really cool. I think George Burns would approve.
He would. And there's eight of these fans all along the ceiling lines. And they get over 85% of the smoke. And if that's not enough, then we have these big vents over here. Those are 3,500 CFM. So basically, this is all technical mumbo-jumbo. That means we clean air 12 times an hour. And to give your listeners a comparison, hospitals only clean their air 8 times an hour. So the air here is extremely clean, despite the fact that people smoke. And so you could be sitting on one end of this lounge and doing your work, and someone could be, you know, several booths over smoking. You might smell a little bit of the aroma of premium tobacco, but you're not going to be breathing the smoke. And that's a big deal. And that's why we are very popular with the ladies. We get a lot of ladies coming in here, who some of whom are career cigar smokers and some of whom never smoked cigars before. And we really think of cigars not like a big cigarette, which is a mistake. We think of it more like a fine wine.
Yeah, I was thinking wine too.
Something you do on occasion, something that's designed to be appreciated and understood, not just consumed.
Also, you could look that way about coffee, because I know you treat coffee really respectfully. And I wanted to ask your question. So how does this work with relation to the cannabis industry, like at all? How does there any, like, I just thought I'd ask that question because people are wondering.
I'd have to say there's no relationship whatsoever. Cigar people and cannabis people simply don't eat lunch in the same cafeteria, if you know what I mean. The laws in California are, everyone thinks California is very cannabis friendly. Try to start a cannabis business and you'll find out how wrong that is. It's extremely regulated. Any kind of business that has anything to do with tobacco, kratom, cannabis, hemp, falls under intense amounts of regulation that will make it prohibitive for most people to go into business. The way we do it, the way we circumnavigate that is, this lounge is not just a cigar lounge. In fact, I sometimes push back on that when I talk to reporters and say that's overly reductive. We are a shared workspace, just like WeWork or Newhouse or Second Home. Except that in none of those places can you take a break and have a smoke. And I've been in the music business most of my life and in the arts most of my life. And many creative people I know consider smoking a part of their creative process. And so when I saw these big, very expensive shared workspaces in Hollywood, supposedly catering to the creative community, and yet they don't even have a break room or a balcony or an atrium or any place where you can grab a smoke, I was appalled. And that's why I said there's got to be a market for people who want to work and smoke in the same location. I created this. And I like to say now that if you like to work and you like to smoke
come
at
in.
The same time, around the same time, then ash is not your best friend.
My neighbor gave me a nice piece of carrot cake. I appreciate it. You're so sweet. Thank you. Sorry about that. Without getting political or anything like that, I envy you. We are completely 100% locked down right now in Ontario, Canada. I can't get a haircut. I can't go to anything. Like, Subway is like takeout only. Most things are closed. It's in another 12 days. So I hope things are, I'm so happy for you to be able to have your lounge like you are. I wanted to mention that. It's been rough.
Thanks. I'm just saying, if you like to work and smoke, then this is, yes, this is the place where you can come and not be shamed and be happy and, you know, work on our, we have high resolution monitors, network printers, we're a fully functioning shared workspace and office and a cigar lounge.
Now, aside from Buddy, what's the animal policy?
You can bring your dog as long as they're well behaved.
There you go. That's pretty great. I'm really proud of you. I know this was one of your sort of brainchilds and almost like bucket list. You want to do these things for some time. So to see it actually in action is wonderful. I'm proud of you, Josh. So Moses Avalon is who we're talking to. I call him Josh sometimes, but MosesAvalon.com is his music industry advocacy site where we initially met. And I appreciate your time today showing me the lounge, and I hope to come and see you sometime there, maybe play some music, acoustic or something. Are you going to be having like a little stage there that's going to be broadcasting on the internet or something soon?
I don't think we'll be doing that soon. We have a number of other rudiments to get in place before we start trying to build upon our licenses. We need special licenses to do that in Los Angeles, and I don't want to pursue those licenses at the time. But I don't think anything would stop you from coming in for your acoustic guitar, playing a few tunes, entertaining some of my lounge guests. I'm sure they'd love it. So yeah, you can do that.
Right on. Anything, what's the future look like for you? Have you heard about the Apple 3DO launch coming? Any thoughts on that?
Don't have any information on it, and I have no thoughts on it. As I said, I've been completely focused on my lounge, and the other half of me is being focused almost entirely on the finishing up of my personal memoir, which is coming out in September on Chicago Review Press, and we'll do another podcast about that. So
I'm excited about that one.
There is very little about the music industry in the book, but if you're ever curious about how a recording engineer, you know, transformed into an artist rights advocate with a secret name, this book is kind of like my origin episode.
I love this Boba Fett origin story. Definitely a passion project. I know that Moses is working on for a long time, and I'm very excited for him to have this release.
All they have to do is just go to my website and sign up for my mailing list, and I'll merge them into my other list, which is for the marketing of my memoir.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining me today on the Musicians Insider. This is episode 2. Please definitely share it with your friends on Cronus.tv. Maybe we'll come to see you in Ash Lounge when we're allowed to visit again. And you have a wonderful rest of your weekend, Josh. All right. Thank you.